What up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Auto Tempest. You know how Auto Tempest works. It makes your life easier by handling your double work for you. Why search all of the car sites on the internet yourself when there's a site that does that job for you? AutoTempest.com looks at all the major car sites, a bunch of the minor car sites, and you only have to type in your information for what you're searching for. One time. And pretty soon it's going to be even better because they're integrating a new function that I can't say yet, but it's a new marketplace of vehicles. And that's going to be coming to Auto Tempest Search very soon. They have been great to us over the years. So when you're looking for a car, do us a favor by going to Auto Tempest and doing yourself a favor by going to Auto Tempest because you are saving yourself time. And time, people, is money. AutoTempest.com. We love them. Next up, look into your hood. Maybe your check engine light comes on. What are you gonna do? What do you do? Step one, get yourself a Blue Driver Pro Scan Tool. Blue Driver can read all the computer systems in your vehicle, tell you what the problem is, and suggest solutions from a database of millions of ASE verified fixes. Then fix the problem yourself or head to the garage armed with knowledge. Either way, you're in control. Plus, Blue Driver can do so much more than just read codes. View live data from your vehicle, read freeze frame and mode 6, do a smog check, stay up to date on recalls and service bulletins, and much more. That's why Blue Driver is the best-selling scan tool on Amazon. Don't take our word for it. Check out the thousands of positive reviews on Amazon, reviews written by real people who saved a ton of time and money with Blue Driver. For a limited time, take advantage of the special Smoking Tire offer. Visit bluedriver.com/TST. That's bluedriver.com/TST to get 10% off the Blue Driver Pro Scan Tool. Don't let your car troubles be a mystery again. Get Blue Driver today at bluedriver.com/TST. And how about that Brio Beardscape, folks? I broke it out last night. I was getting awful scruffy. You're going to see in my BMW M5 review how scruffy I got. And the Beardscape is so money. It's like, everybody hates working on your car with cheap, crappy tools, right? You want to use good quality tools. You know they're going to last. You know they're going to help your life, not make it more annoying. Same thing with the buzzer. Stop using that cheap trimmer and upgrade to a smooth, quiet, precision trimming device. The Beardscape is the jam. I've been using it for like 2 years. I buzz my face, then I shave with the razor, and then I look good. I also use it in other places that you probably don't want to think about. But it be what it be, man. That's what happens when you have a 98% male listening ratio. You get to talk about your ball hair. The Beardscape has a ceramic blade 4 times harder than stainless steel and stays sharp longer. The micro adjustments on the blade help you get that precision shave. Go to Brio for Life. That's Brio, the number 4, life.com, and use code SMOKING to get the best price online for the Beardscape. That's Brio for Life.com. Code SMOKING at checkout. Get the best price on the internet for that Brio Beardscape joint. All right, on this episode, we have, I'm excited for this one because we've got Bozy Tatrovic in studio. Bozy is one of my homies from back east. He is one of the best follows on Twitter. His Twitter is Hoonable, and he works on race cars. He's a race crew chief. He writes about stuff. He has imported vehicles. He has fixed, swapped engines. He's just like a really interesting car person to know, and I'm happy to have him in studio. Bozy Tatrovic on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
And within a few hours.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bozy Tatrovic. What's happening, brother?
Welcome
to the West Side.
Thank you.
Cheers with this Lotus Whiskey.
Thank you for the warm welcome. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
It's nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
You don't make it to LA much.
No, because most of my stuff's on the East Coast.
I know. Yeah,
no, so it's
the East Coast, like, it reminds me of how small the East Coast kind of is because you live in North Carolina and I go fly to all these different cities to do these races and you drive there from wherever.
Yeah, I mean,
you're a fucking mad road warrior.
Yeah, I mean, I go to VIR. In the last few months, I've been to VIR 30 or 40 times because it's an hour from my house.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I like that place.
Yeah.
VR is great. Cool,
yeah.
And like all the people there are awesome. And then like one of the teams I'm working with in World Challenge, they actually rented a garage there. So Tech Sport Racing that I work on the Subarus. So,
oh,
like,
yeah,
they
yeah.
moved a lot of their operation from New York to Virginia. So just roll up there, go work on the car, adjust a little bit, go home.
There you go.
That's not bad.
That's cool. Money.
They build Ariel Adams there too, I think.
Yeah.
There's like a
yeah.
shop there nearby.
TMI Tech.
TMI, yeah. What's that guy's name? He was such a nice guy, the TMI guy. Damn it.
I don't know. They gave me an Ariel Nomad for a week.
Yeah.
That was very nice.
Yeah, there's a little technology park there. So there's all kinds of random stuff. And then there's just like guys that just rent a garage to like work on their race car. So like right beside where the team is, there's a guy that has a Spec E46.
Just a personal question. We were just talking about those in the last show. You ever drive Spec E46?
I have not driven one.
Bro, we both got to have a go in one.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so fun.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful little race car.
Yeah, they seem really good. I mean, this guy has his like all perfect mil spec connectors and all this other stuff. I mean, that's like, you know, his baby. But
does he race it or is he just fucking around with it?
No, he races it NASA. So I think they're going to be racing their VR like mid-October. So like, couple weeks ago, I was up there, and he was there, and he showed me some of the stuff. And he's got like three or four engines for it. So, depending on where he races it, he'll put a different engine in. You know, whatever
lunatic.
The class allows. You know,
did he do it himself?
Yeah,
boss.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And he builds BMW like suspension stuff for other people.
I wonder if he knows Fellow. He sounds very Fellow like. Do you remember?
I love Fellow.
Yo, Fellow. Do you know Fellow Ambivero? You ever hear that name? This dude used to work for me when I was running the Gotham office back here. And he was a drifter, and he was in Pro 2 for a while. He's in and out of Pro 2, the Formula Drift Pro 2. Fucking great driver, and a total lunatic, exists pretty much only on Red Bull and Newport cigarettes and McDonald's. And I used to call him the E36 Whisperer.
Yeah.
And I don't know, is that really his Twitter? Does he?
Yeah.
I can't imagine him tweeting, but his Instagram is fun.
Yeah.
And I call him the E36 Whisperer because he was like, he could like bear, his writing was the worst writing. Like he couldn't spell for nothing, but he had three E36s and two drivetrains, a turbo and an NA one, and he could swap an E36 drivetrain by himself in 12 hours. He was like you.
Yeah,
he was basically you, but like with more cigarettes.
Dude, he
just
was crazy.
Just with BMWs. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He like, was the BMW
like
guy.
We'd have a job where we have to haul like all the autocross stuff out to Arizona.
Yeah.
So we're like, all right, we'll see you in the morning. He's like, yeah, I'm gonna swap the drivetrain on this tonight, and he did.
It was
and he stayed up and then
wild.
Drove
that's,
the truck
that's wild.
The next day.
I can. Yeah.
Follow him on Instagram. What's his? I want to get. Let's get Fellow some followers. He's gonna wake up tomorrow. And be like, where these followers come from? Fello_racing.
Yeah, I'm definitely.
He's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to follow that. I like guys like that. I work with a few. And I mean,
he's definitely your type.
Yeah, I'm like that sometimes. But you know,
well, I watched you do a gearbox twice in one fucking race.
Yeah.
That's amazing. But that's the story of that race was such a bummer. Yeah. I felt so bad for you guys.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, that's just how racing goes sometimes. I mean, you know, no matter what level you are. And coincidentally, John Shovel, who was there with me, where basically me and Shovel were swapping the gearboxes.
Yeah, shout out to John, too, who's not here, but did the transes.
Yeah, so we're like both of us under the car, but we actually compete against each other now. So, like, I work.
Who's he working with?
EU Euro Parts Racing. So they run the Audi TCR cars, which actually they're wrapping up their program now. Just you know, just money stuff with the company. But he's been working with them. I'm sure he'll be in IMSA too. But I work with LA Honda World on the Civic Type R TCR, and he works on the Audi TCR.
Oh, that's
so we actually
funny.
Compete against each other.
That's hilarious.
Like, there's
it
go,
seems
go
like
back
you're,
up. Yeah,
there's
right there.
John right there in the gray shirt.
Yeah,
yeah. He's a beast.
So this
and
is
your
a,
brother,
yep,
your
Boyan,
brother Boyan,
yeah.
who rules.
Yeah,
who at one point indirectly worked for my dad.
Yeah,
he worked at a Ralph Lauren like distributor or something.
He worked for Ralph Lauren. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
but on the
e-commerce side. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but he like all this clothes moving around. He did stuff with that.
Yeah, it was like logistics stuff.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
what I
yeah,
meant by distributor.
Yeah,
not yeah, it was. But
that's
dude.
That's like high school. All I had was like polo, just everything polo, because he got the hookup. So like they, you know, whenever you know they had employee sales, he'd just bring me out like a bunch of stuff, and
bro,
that's all I ever wore.
We raided the fucking blank tees and the little mini horse tees.
Oh yeah, I had bunches and bunches.
I went
of those.
Big pony for a while too. I rocked the that.
Yeah.
The, That big pony thing was genius. Mm-hmm. You know why they did that? Mm. It was for the because they sponsor the U.S. Open, the tennis thing. It was for the ball boys, so you could see the logo on TV. So they did it for the ball boy shirts. Yeah. And then people were like, oh, what's that? And then the horse got bigger and bigger and bigger until it was like, you know, Kanye had one. Yeah.
I had one of those shirts from a sale, like, because they had like experimental clothes at some of these employee sales. So I had one where it went on the shoulder.
Yeah,
like there was a piece over here and it went down like halfway down the
it
shirt.
It became like a caricature of
itself. Yeah,
it was, but, you know. Yeah, look.
They got so big. It was the douchiest thing in Colorado. Yeah, I remember.
There, look at the bright blue one. Go up, up to the right, that bright, look how big.
Yeah
see, it started getting getting real wild.
Yeah, I had one of those, the rugby style with the numbers on the arm.
The rugby was a thing for a minute.
I had a whole bunch of those,
but that rugby brand destroyed for about 4 years and then went right off
clear.
So, well, you know what I want to talk about, because I want to there's a bunch of things, but like I would like you to tell me, because you've told me, but I want you to tell everybody else where you're from. Like, really, the full story.
So,
into the microphone. Oh, I know you've been on an airplane, but we do radio here.
Of course. My apologies, sir. I'm so sorry. Just, you know,
please raise your seat back,
yes,
sir.
Yes. That's I've been, you know, you get yelled at on the plane. So, I was born in Bosnia in 1986. So, lived there, born in Sarajevo. So, most people that are familiar with it will know Sarajevo is the capital city of Bosnia. So, lived there until the early 90s, until about 91, 92, and then a civil war broke out. So, that's the kind of Yugoslavia breaking up. So, there was war in Croatia, war in Slovenia, war in Bosnia. And then after that, we kind of hid for a while where we could and then started bouncing around the country. And then we got out of the country and got to Montenegro, which is kind of the coastal area of Serbia. And then while we were there, we got into a program with an organization called IOM, International Organization for Migration. So it's a refugee organization. Basically, if you're in danger, you can apply and then go through, like, usually anywhere from a few months to a few years to get approved. So my parents went through the program, and just a little over 2 years from when they started the program until we got approved, and then...
And like, what was the level of danger? Like, when they were like, describe the threat, what did you describe?
You basically had to describe that, you know, like, you've lost your home, like, you know, the area where your home is taken by somebody that, you know, wants to do you harm.
Yeah.
And then, so, like, you have to...
Were you guys literally ejected from your home? Or was the building bombed, or like...
No, I mean, it was... So, there's a lot of stuff that happened, but basically, there were, you know, like three main sides during the war, and there was a side, like Serb side, Croat side, and Bosniak side, and each of the sides kind of pushed in an area. So wherever one side was strongest, it would push forward and try to take more land.
It's just a power. It was a power struggle almost.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, you know, this, like, is a whole big complex topic, but the initial, like,
I think we can solve it today, though.
Yeah.
We can figure it out.
Well,
can we get Kushner on the phone? He'll have insight on this.
Of course, yeah. But, like, the big
Let's
thing
go
was...
to the phone.
That's it. The big thing was all these republics wanted independence, and then there were people in the republics that didn't want to be independent, people that did want to be independent, and then people that felt loyal to one side of the country, people that felt loyal to the other side of the country. So everybody fought for what their idea was, and
like in their little area.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, okay. And that was the thing, is there was three groups, and in certain parts of the countries, two groups would be fighting against each other, but in another part of the country, they would be aligned against the third group. Like, it was like, it made
crazy.
No sense. Like, it's everybody just listening to propaganda from the politicians and just fighting for what they can. And that's like the wild thing is, you know, where I am in North Carolina, we have all three of the ethnic groups that fought against each other in the war, and everybody hangs out, everybody's friends.
That's
like,
crazy.
After the war ended, even like, you know, we're like first generation immigrants, so most of us had exposure to it, but after it ended, we're like, you know, this doesn't make sense. Like, you know,
it doesn't apply over here.
Yeah,
like
we speak the same language, you know, we look the same, we act the same, we eat the same type of food. Like, why would we argue? That's like,
I hear,
you know,
the same thing about Israelis and Palestinians on an individual level.
I think it's very similar on individual
that's
level.
That's what I was just thinking, but that's what's interesting is that even outside of that conflicted area, a lot of times they don't get along because there's so much politics behind it.
And I mean, there's some of that here too. And like, our whole area is very, very complex. So Yugoslavia used to be communist. So you have this generation of people that all they know is communism. So like even now, like all they think about is communism was good because all this bad shit happened after communism ended because everybody wanted their own republic, everybody wanted democracy. Mm-hmm. And then that's the thing too, is like everything over there has been stable since like the early 2000s, but the economy is still kind of crappy because a lot of people still do business in the communist way where I want to open a business, so I'm going to go pay off this state official or go here, pay this guy off. And, you know, and then a lot of it's just, you know, bad decisions and rebuilding after a war.
Yeah. All right. So you get into this program, you come to America when you were how old?
I was 8. My brother was 6 and my parents were like in their mid 30s.
Okay.
So basically we had to get sponsorship. So you don't just come to America. Like, you'll get approved for the program, and then the refugee organization has to look for somebody to give you a loan. So, like, you have to pay for your plane tickets and all this stuff. It's not just show up. So, they found a church.
Were your parents, like, decently well off over there, or were they...
Before the war, yeah. So, like, they were an attorney and an accountant. So, fairly decent jobs, but once the war started...
Little known fact, the least paid jobs in all of Bosnia, actually. Hot dog salesman, killing it.
Yeah, that's it right there. But, I mean, we were reasonably well off. They were building a new home when the war started, you know, and it was, you know, we lived pretty well before all that, but once the war started, the banks collapsed, and, like, anything you didn't have in your hands, you didn't
own. Was just fucking gone.
Yeah, so, like, basically all the cash that you had on you, which when we came to America, was maybe $300 or $400.
Wow.
That was it. That's where we came, you know. But basically, this church sponsored us. So, like, when they got to the end of the program, they found a few different nonprofit organizations, churches, and local, like, NGO type places that would offer money to give you a loan and help you get started. So, I think it was like a place in North Dakota, this church in North Carolina. Uh-huh. And, you know, they looked at some, like, books, and they're like, yeah, there's nobody in North Dakota. And, like, my dad had some family that had gone through the program that chose North Carolina, too. So, like, we're going to go there.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, how did all these refugees from that area, you said, even from all sides of the war, ended up in North Carolina? Like, how that happened? So, was that intentional?
Well, part of it is the organization. So, if these nonprofit organizations that are giving out these loans, and sometimes they're giving out grants where they're paying for a portion of it, wherever they were, that's where the refugees are. Yeah. And then once the refugees get there, so, like, once we got here, you know, my parents worked, like, real crap jobs. So, like, the first job they worked here was, like, building kitchen cabinets, like, building doors for, like, $4.75 an hour, you know.
And like, they'd never done shit like that before.
Well,
I
mean, you know, not really. Like, my dad, you know, like, he worked on cars and stuff because he liked cars for fun. And he did, like, random jobs, like, when he was a teenager, you know, he did, like, construction.
But not, yeah, okay.
But right. Not since they had, like, finished college, you know. So, basically, all these people kind of come here, and once they're kind of stable, so my parents started with these, like, real crap jobs, and then once they started to learn English, worked their way up a little bit, and then got better jobs, so now they got $10 an hour jobs. Then a couple more years, they got $15 an hour jobs, and then they both decided to go back to college in their early 40s, because they, you know...
What's it like, if you can speak to this, like, they are... When they're back in Bosnia, they're highly educated people with, you know, white collar job, whatever you want to call it, but they're educated people. Yeah. Then they have to come here and almost start over until they learn the language, save up money to go either get educated. But is the whole time
begin getting educated again?
Right? Are the whole time they're like, God, this is annoying. You know, back home we were this, and now we're this.
No.
Or is it this is amazing? Keep your head up. Like, we're very fortunate.
That's the thing is, like, when we were kids, like, even though, like me and my brother, you know, have talked about this, like, recently, we just sat down and talked about it, like, you know, like, sometimes we spend on dinner what they made combined in a week when we first got to the country.
Yeah.
And we're just talking about trying to, like, just make sense of that. But, like, when we got here, like, you know, we thought that we're the richest kids in the world. Because, like, you know, my dad worked 2 or 3 jobs. My mom usually worked 2. And then they kind of were able to get down to 1 job. So, like, they both worked multiple jobs. They rarely saw each other, but whenever they were with us, they're like, everything is awesome.
Yeah.
We're not getting shot at. Like, you know, this is good. So, like, we had toys, we had, you know, candy, whatever, like, every other kid had. We had, like, you know, basically, like, most of what they earned went to, you know, me and my brother.
Yeah. So, you had a great Twitter thread, like, I don't know, months ago. There was, like, a series of the kind of, like, crappy yet interesting cars that your parent went through. Yeah, like do the list. Like what car they could, because this is allegedly this is a car show. We're not. It's not the all refugee hour. Yeah, but when you told me like the refugee story, I was like, oh my god, wait, Bozy's like not just the interesting most interesting person on Twitter. Like you're like the only refugee I know. So I mean, that's good. Yeah, and your brother. Excuse me. Sorry, Boyan. I know you're fucking out there. I'm not trying to discount you, but you're not in that chair.
I'm gonna have to bring him next time.
Oh yeah, dude! If he was coming to town fully, I love Boyan. He rules.
I'm sure he'll be around. He's just kind of chilling right now, doing a few different gigs. So he'll I'm sure he'll come through here at some point.
Wait, but, so give us the list of your parents' crappy cars.
So when we got here, the first car they had wasn't actually their car. It was like somebody like in the neighborhood just let him borrow a car. And it was some like Buick from the mid 80s, like front wheel drive, little econobox Buick that had like
Skylark, right?
Skylark, that's it. That's it. And it had like seven or eight different like colors of panels because it was just like a salvage car that was put together. And it was like for people in the neighborhood to use. So this was like.
Oh, it was like the neighborhood share car.
Yeah. Like somebody bought it, but it was for everybody because like when we got here, because of the jobs they worked, we live in the project. So like, you know, that's, you know, just how stuff goes there, you know, like that. And after that, they saved up a little money and got a Plymouth Acclaim. Yeah, so that was,
they're really terrible.
Yeah, it was a purple Plymouth Acclaim, like a 91 or 92.
The flat rear window, right?
Correct, yeah. So,
man, whatever happened to that era of the flat?
I think they just all crumpled, like they're just dust now.
You know which one I kind of DL liked was the Cougar? The Cougar?
Oh, with the flat?
Flat rear window?
I mean, it wasn't bad. Like,
it is. You're still wrong about
this. Definitely
you're
bad. But
I mean, it had decent stuff underneath it, you know? Like,
thought like an IMSA'd out Cougar could be kind of cool. There's a Skylark. Yeah. There's an IMSA'd Skylark and an IMSA Oldsmobile one.
Yeah, I was at Pebble and the Historics last month and I saw both of them. Yeah, like they're awesome. Like those are like the GTO, GTU cars. Like some of my favorite stuff.
We literally talked about this on Twitter today. Is it? Something has like the right come of race parts. Yeah. It's suddenly good looking.
Yeah, where like a flat
I retweeted your tweet because it looked badass. I mean, like, look at it.
Yeah, that's a LeBaron. Like it's a LeBaron.
It's a LeBaron.
Anything you put fenders on or like aero on, it's got to look awesome.
In fairness,
fat sidewall. Oh, it's good.
What's great about the LeBaron in a NASCAR is that you're allowed to make the pop up lights closed for the NASCAR.
So you have all the slipperiness.
They just drew a couple of rectangles.
The only LeBaron thing works. Here is the grill. It looks like a sticker.
I dated a girl that drove a LeBaron in high school, and what a hunk of shit.
I've heard. I think I've only driven a LeBaron for like 10 feet once.
Like, terrible.
That was it. I've never like, and that was enough.
The weirdest thing about a LeBaron is that the blinker is on the gauge binnacle, not the steering column.
That's weird.
It's very
doesn't
very
make any
strange.
Sense at all. I wonder why that is.
Because they had to be fucking weird. Yeah, because they make it weird. So,
design
Plymouth,
or whatever.
So what was after the Plymouth Acclaim?
So Plymouth Acclaim, that got sold, and they got a Dodge Caravan. So like we had a progression of vans. So the first one, the first one was like a 1988 or 89 Plymouth Voyager. So like they started very basic, like this one didn't have like the tinted rear glass. Like this is like the very basic one because that's all they could afford at the time.
Yeah. Right. This one didn't have doors, but it ran.
Yeah, exactly. that like that. So they had that, and then that one got traded for like a 91 or 92 Dodge Caravan. So the Dodge Caravan had the factory tint on the rear, had the captain's chair in the second row.
Yeah.
And I mean, this was still like a 6 or 7 year old car with like 80 or 90,000 miles, but it was slightly better.
But at the time, also like
chairs are forever.
They invented the minivan and it was, so they were the best at it, right?
Yeah. So like, really you know, it was a used car, but like, I remember that, like those cars specifically, because this is like, we're like 11, 12. I'm 11, 12 and Boyan's like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And like, we had that van, so we went everywhere. So like this was like
now the road trip.
Now
the
we get
school,
to go on road trips, adventures and stuff. So like my parents, they got us a little mattress that would fit in the back. So they took out the seats and like we went to Canada, like just chilling in the back. I just had a mattress back there, had a bed, and like drove all the way up to like Ottawa because they had some friends up there. So like trips like that was, you know, like really fun and really memorable. Where, you know, it was, you know, just a crappy old van, but it was a cool van because we did cool stuff with it.
Yeah.
So After that, they got a Pontiac Bonneville.
Oh.
It was a 1989 Pontiac Bonneville. It was light blue in color.
Those were actually kind of cool.
They were decent. Yeah. Like, so they had the 3.8 liter V6, which is still one of my favorite engines to this day.
Because like can't kill it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, other than some of them, they had the intake manifold, the gaskets that would leak, which is fairly easily fixable. Like, it's not, you know, like the end all for the engine.
Didn't Jack have a RX-7 race car or something? Yeah, them guys had a Black Betty.
Black Betty, yeah, Tin Man. Yeah, the Tin Man owns that one. The fabricator, and I'm blanking on his name right now, but yeah, Tin Man, he owns that Black Betty. So like Jack, Mark, Sam,
Mental,
they all raced it for a while. Yeah,
it's like an FCRX-7. I think so. It's like an 88 or 3800 in it. It's apparently very
with
fast.
With a 3800 in it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's got to be quick, right?
It's got chassis. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, because, I mean, 3800, if you open it up a little bit, it'll make like 250 pound feet of torque, which in an FCRX-7 is very decent.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, you know, what
did they use it in the supercharged Pontiacs?
Yes.
They did, right?
So that 3.8 liter started as like a Buick engine in the 60s. So like in the 60s, they used it, and then like it basically just built up on it over time. Mm-hmm. Then it got spread to, you know, Chevy and Pontiac and all these other ones. And they used it all the way up until like 2008 or 2009. So like the last of the Grand Prix Generation 4, I think it is, 3.8, the 3800 supercharged. And I think they got him up to close to 300 horsepower by the end of its run.
Yeah.
But that engine was modified in various configurations. There was a cart version of it,
Racing?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Really?
So there was a Buick 3800 racing version that was like 600 horsepower or something. It was ridiculous.
What defines when a car or an engine has been used for that long that it's still being, quote, continued and not considered just a new engine that has the same displacement as the original? Like, you know, they say it has the same architecture.
Yeah, sure.
Like, I'm wondering, you know, it's like, is it like a house where if you rip it down but you keep the fireplace in one column, it's like, nope, same house.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. And a whole lot of it is just marketing. So a whole lot of it is what the manufacturer says. Like, you know, it's
when they say words like all new.
Yeah, all new or first ever, all this other stuff. And it's also how I get paid often, because they say all new and then I go back and find out that it's not all new and somebody pays me to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it works out for me sometimes. But I mean, for me, like from a personal standpoint of how like I view it, is if there are parts that interchange with whatever the previous generation is or previous version is, then I consider it a continuation.
Okay.
So like the LS engines, like that's one of my favorite engines to work with. I love swapping them into stuff, working on them. So like they're basically a small block Chevy. So Chevy's been making small blocks since the 60s. But like the original small blocks, you can't take a crank or a rod or a wrist pin or an intake from one and put it on an LS or on an LT, like the new version of the LT.
Yeah.
And the same thing with the LS. So you have two generations of LS. You have generation 3 and generation 4, which is like generation 3 is from 99 to 2005. Generation 4 is from like 06 to 2016. And they have slightly different cranks, but most of the other parts interchange. So that's a continuation.
Okay.
And like the LT engines that you see in the Corvette and the Camaro now are a whole new generation, because none of the parts really interchange, even though they're very, very similar, like in the shape and parts and displacement's exactly the same. So it's just, you know, if parts can interchange, I consider it a continuation.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Okay.
By that measure, the Aston V12
is
basically a Ford Mondeo from 1996.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and you can, you can pull parts out of that motor, and they'll fit in a Duratec out of
a
Taurus or whatever.
Yeah, they do. It has the same like rods and pistons and shit as a Taurus.
You can find a Taurus shop and be like, "How much do you charge for cams?" And then put it in your Aston Martin.
All you gotta do is just weld two together, because you know that's kind of what it is. But I mean, that's literally how they started with that engine. And of course, I mean, there was fine tuning, but that's basically what it is.
Yeah, we were talking the last show about that Ford Indigo concept from '96. That was the Transverse 12, and that engine became the Aston engine.
That's exactly that kind of like very aggressive front end. Like,
yeah.
I don't know how to describe it.
No, it had a fwing.
Yeah, that's it.
And the fwing was a GT3 RS wing that really looked like it was mounted backwards.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Like, no, look, here, look, Zach, I'll get a picture of it. The fwing is highly, highly fwingy.
Oh, yeah. that's like,
doesn't that look like a GT3 RS wing in reverse?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you won't see anything ever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's you know, like what I was thinking of is the Plymouth Prowler. Like,
this, oh yeah,
that's the most similar thing I can think of when trying to think of this.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, it's,
oh, you just ruined it for me though.
Oh no, they're very similar. This is better looking. Yeah. Just it fills in the gaps in the rear fender.
Yeah. But I mean, just, you know, just imagine that, as, you know, they were able to get a 12 in this, and the Prowler had a V6.
The Plymouth Prowler, when that came out, even, I don't remember how old I was. I think it was high school, 2000 or something. But I was just...
96 it came out. 97
I was like
the first model year.
Sad and upset that it didn't come with a good engine. I was really like, what?
Me too. And remember the first year, like a few different like tuner shops tried.
Yeah.
They tried to swap a motor. Yeah. Remember someone put just like a 200 shot?
Not mess with all this fabrication.
Somebody
stuff.
Just fucking 200 shot at it.
That's good. Good enough.
There's just not enough room up there for motor. And these bumpers look plastic.
Yeah.
They look like it came out of a...
they're brutal.
It's so bad.
I mean, what did that sell for, Zach? I can't read that.
23.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want
to
like...
I mean, is it, Bozy, is it possible to fit? Because when this came out, I don't know if anyone tried an LS. Can you get an LS in there, you think?
You could potentially get an LS in there, but it's still a big pain in the ass. Just because the subframe is so narrow, so the suspension starts so close to the engine. So, like, you'd have to do, like, a dry sumped LS and, like... weight, like, you still couldn't balance the weight very well. Like, just
is there anything you can do? Has anyone ever done anything successfully with one of those?
I mean, they put some hemis in there.
Yeah, someone put a hemi in there?
Yeah, there's been a few with hemis.
Sticking out the sides, probably. Yeah, that engine is huge.
Yeah, it's huge. It's much wider than the LS, but people have done hemis because, you know, Plymouth, hemi.
Right.
You know,
it makes sense. Yeah, you really can't. What else are you going to find?
Wow.
Yeah.
There's so much room in front of the engine. It does nothing.
Narrow,
well, I guess you have, that's your suspension, but that's so
still,
weird.
I mean, maybe if you made like a V-shaped radiator.
I mean, you can move some stuff around, but
I don't know, the
main issue is just that it's narrow. So like if you got like a 2JZ, like a
2JZ
would be perfect because it's narrow and long and, like, you know, it'd be something that you could fit in here.
Paging Hoonigan.
Yeah, there you go. But like most people that own Prowlers, like, have a little Prowler matching trailer and, you know, like polish them up and do all that shit. Like they're not like, I want power. Like there was like maybe four people in like 97 that wanted to do swaps and then everybody else that owns one now, they just have a club and they, you know, go to the diner and hang out.
And they
you
put the what? Prowler on the Prowler. Like, they always have the toy that sits on the hood.
Yeah. It is kind of fun. It's kind of nice, though, when a collection of people just decides to appreciate something for what it is and not try to make it into something else.
No,
it's kind of relieving a little bit on them.
It's
good
cool.
Point.
I mean, you know, everybody likes different things, and if that's what you like and you want to hang out and polish the car up, that's cool. You know, everybody's got a different
buff type of enthusiasm. Son.
Yeah, I mean, different type of enthusiasm. Like, you know, I'm completely different than that. Like, I like to use things. So,
yeah,
you know, just tear into it. And
when did you start working on cars?
Probably when I was 12. So that kind of goes back to the original story, maybe 11 or 12. So dad, he worked at the factory. He went to work at a factory that made tubes for paper towels, so like the cardboard piece in the middle
tubes?
Yeah, in the middle of a paper towel. So he went there, so that was like a, you know, a jump from there, and he was tired of that because it was just like really crappy conditions. And so he worked there during the day and went to mechanic school at night. So like when he was younger, he liked messing around with cars, just doing basic stuff, and he's like, you know, I'm making $13 an hour here, I can make $16 an hour as a mechanic, and with flat rate, once I get better at stuff, I can stack up a whole bunch of hours. So he went to mechanic school. This was in 1998. So I was 12. And he got his ASE certifications. I mean, he went for like a year, basically every single class that you could take, just so you could get all these certifications, so you could get a job. So he got a job at a Mitsubishi dealer. So that's how, like, there's like, I've had like Monteros.
Yeah.
I've had like...
Didn't you start with like a Diamante or a Galan or something?
So I've had like four Diamantes. Boyan's had like two Diamantes. Like, most people don't have one Diamante. Like, but we've had
it's
multiple.
It's weird to have even one Diamante.
When they came out with the 3000, did he have a meeting with the other techs and the boss was like, we're going to be busy. Yeah. We're all buying a boat.
Kind of. But that's kind of where my automotive enthusiasm started. So like, even as a 12, 13 year old, like... because, you know, he was doing this stuff, he was working at the dealership, but he was also fixing cars on the side, like at the house. So he'd like go work at the dealership 50, 60 hours a week. And then on the weekends, people would bring, like from the neighborhood, would bring their cars to our house and he'd fix them there. So like me and Boyan would
hustle.
Go. Yeah. I mean,
fucking
he
hustle,
was,
man.
I mean,
it's hard.
That's like where, like, you know, like both me and Boyan just like have like all kinds of gigs going all the time and just working and just, you know, I'll have basically all kinds of different hustles. Is we've picked that up from him and my mom.
Yeah.
Because that's what they did, like in our like formative years when we were young, is they just hustled all the time, worked 2, 3, 4 jobs. So he would work on these cars and we'd basically like hold the flashlight, hand him tools and stuff like that, you know, when we were 12, 13, whatever. And that's kind of where we picked up what, you know, tools go where, what things go, you know, wherever. And, you know, he noticed that we liked it. So like when I was 15, I went and got my license in the Bonneville. The Bonneville, they bought the Bonneville with like 80,000 miles. And by the time they had it, by the time, you know, I had turned 15 and a half when I finished driver's ed, at that time it had 276. So like they had, you know, used it well, but yeah, it was like the car I got my license in, it was like an extra car they kept because it wasn't worth anything.
Yeah.
So I got my license in the Bonneville and my dad worked at that Mitsubishi dealer at that time. So he, whenever people traded in like just like real crappy cars, like where people would like come get an estimate for something and it would be like a $3,000 estimate and the car's worth like $1,200, like he would be like, you know, if you don't want to fix it, I'll give you $500 for it.
Yeah.
So that's like the first Diamante. It was a 92 Diamante and those 3 liter and some of the 3.5 liter V6s that Mitsubishi used in the late 80s, early 90s, early 2000s, they had issues with valve stem seals. So like, you know, valve covers had to come off, cylinder head had to come off, all this stuff. And like the valve stem seals weren't expensive themselves. Yeah. They're like $2 a piece, you know. So there was a Diamante like that that was just like blowing oil through the exhaust because the valve stem seals were leaking.
Mm-hmm.
So he bought that for like $500, brought it to the house. He's like, if you can fix this, there's your car right there. I was wow. like, it was a decent Diamante.
Yeah.
Like, this is like, you know, 2002, 2001, yeah. It was like a 92 Diamante. So yeah. It was like a 9-year-old, you know, Mitsubishi that, you know, it was a
92? That was before they got heinous looking, too,
yeah, it was
right?
A pearl white 92 Diamante LS. Yeah. So, like, exactly like that first.
These share
right
so
there.
Much shape with the Lincoln LS. It's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah they really
wild,
did.
Yeah. But it was a pearl white 92. So he brought that to
they
the house.
They got real ugly later.
Yeah, they got squared off. Yeah.
that like, was this a pretty one, good one.
Yeah, these, I like the squared were, off, yeah.
Yeah, these were like pretty decent. And like it was a really, really nice car for like a high schooler because all my friends had like, you know, like ratty Civics and all this other stuff. And
it's luxury vehicles.
Yeah. And like, yeah, like I had like, you know, leather seats. I had a V6 with like 230 horsepower. Yeah. They were all rolling in like 89 Civics with like, you know, 80 horsepower or whatever. And I had an auxiliary input.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So this car, yeah.
It was that was a, like tech.
Yeah. Like this was a 92. Yeah. Yeah. This was a 92. Yeah. And it came with the OEM radio with an auxiliary input in 1992.
That's pretty
wow,
awesome.
That's
yeah,
crazy.
That's
yeah,
like pretty early.
No other car in that era that I've owned, I've seen with it. But
you know what had, I don't know if it goes back to 92, but my mom's 96 Mercury Villager had an aux input. Not only did it have an aux input, it had rear headphone entertainment with independent controls, which was pretty gangster.
That's for 96. That's
it was
like
the Nautica edition, bro.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You told me about that one. Yeah.
See, that's now if I see one, I'm like, I'll follow it down the street.
See, that's do you think the Diamante had an aux cable because instead of Mitsubishi paying the cost to get CD players, they were like, what do you have for 12 cents? And they're like, we got aux cables and like put it in. I mean, well, maybe. I mean, I don't joke, know. But genuinely, like, that's such a weird thing to have back then.
It's like completely odd, and I've never really like that dug deep into it. But I owned that Diamante and another Diamante that was like it, and like a '94 3000 GT that basically had the same head unit and had the same aux like input. And it was always weird to me, but for me. Wow. It was awesome because I had CDs at that time. So I could like take my CD player.
Yeah, your Discman.
Discman and get that, you know, like 3.5 millimeter to 3.5 millimeter, plug
like
it into
Wayne's
that.
World, dude.
Yeah, yeah that's what I did.
When'd you
get
the CD player, dude? Yeah, yeah. When we got the money.
Yeah, well, that's what I had. Yeah, it had like the 10 second anti skip.
Yeah.
So like,
that was huge.
Oh, yours only had 10 seconds? Mine had 30 seconds, bro.
Yes, you know, big money.
And then it was like ESP plus.
Yeah.
Infinite.
Yeah.
They stopped counting the hours.
But I mean, but that's kind of how I started into cars. Like, you know, my dad said, you know, fix it up, but like he did most of the work on that one. Like I just basically like went through it. He's like, well, do this here, do that here, do this here. But that kind of, you know, just
things. It was going to be your car. You weren't going to fail at that task.
Yeah. So my things, that's exactly like.
But when did that turn into like putting LS engines into a WRX and stuff like that?
So.
Well, you did what now?
A Legacy, but yeah. Oh, same subframe. Wow. Yeah.
Continue.
I'm trying to think now. So I got cars, and so Fast and Furious had come out, and it was like Too Fast, Too Furious or something. Mm-hmm. So I had the Diamante. He brought another Diamante home. We sold the first one and fixed the second one. I drove that, and I was like, I can't do anything for this. Like, I can't modify this. Because, you know, at that time, like, in my mind, I was like, I need to get a cold air intake or do something. Like, I want it to sound cool, put an exhaust on it. I was like, I can't do anything with this Diamante.
I had a Legacy GT at the time. Yeah. Like, same thing. You go, all right, well, you don't make anything.
That was it. So I was like, I'm going to sell this Diamante, and I'm going to buy a Mirage. Because, like, the Mirage, you know.
Do they have parts for the Mirage?
Yeah, there were some parts, yeah. And, like, you know, in Europe and Japan, they had the Evo in that, you know, body style. So you could get, like, bumpers and stuff. So this is, like, a 1997 Mirage DE. So, like, you know, it looked
that, it was like the one I drove in New Zealand that the guy turned into an Evo.
Yeah, but that was a good one.
Evo front and rear clips and put them on a Mirage cab.
Yeah, you can do it. Yeah, it's
fucking
not sick. Not terribly hard. Cost some decent money to get those clips, but it all fits.
Well, it was on an Evo chassis. Okay. That was the shit.
Yeah. But mine looked like an Evo, but it had a 1.5 liter with 92 horsepower.
It was like so, this?
Like that.
Yeah, it was kind of
like that. That's kind of Evo-y.
Yeah. So I traded that front bumper. I can't remember for what. Like I bartered up. So like I had some like subs I bought from a guy for like $50, and then I traded that for some wheels that were worth like $200, and basically bartered my way up to a Evo front bumper.
Nice.
Yeah. So I put that Evo front bumper on, and like it didn't come with fogs, so I went to like the trailer store and found like lights that matched the hole in the bumper.
There you go.
So I had like trailer lights that were in the holes, but it looked like it should fit. And
this is you. This is you.
That's so fucking great.
It's very similar to that. It was silver, but it was very similar look to that one. Yeah, fiberglass front bumper. But that was like my first kind of like on my own working on cars. So I enjoyed like, you know, being able to do that. So like then I found an intake, and like I think I started like fabricating stuff, and I say fabricating with like quotation marks because like we were using like PVC pipe and all this stuff to build like a cold air intake. So like, you know, 17 year olds trying to like experiment. Mm-hmm. So after a while we figured out like that we were doing like all this dumb shit, like where we could do something cool. So I actually had a Legacy, so like I had a bunch of other Mitsubishis. I had a Montero Sport, which was actually pretty fun. Mm-hmm. Like went off roading and I did all kinds of stuff. I had a Suzuki. I can't remember now. It's not a Sidekick, but it's the like slightly bigger
the
than
Grand
a Sidekick.
Grand Vitara.
Yeah, something like that. It was the square one, maybe Tracker, but it was a square one, like from the late 90s. But I had one of those. So I had a couple like off roading cars. Not that small, but maybe it was a Sidekick. So I had that, and then I bought a 2000 Subaru Legacy GT. So this is like when they were non-turbo.
Yeah,
like
it was 2.5.
Yep, 2.5, like 170 horsepower or something like that.
Yeah, so, I had that one too. Yeah, I had a 98. It was nice actually, but slow and not moddable. Yeah.
So like I found out very quickly, like it was a cool car, it was a decent price, but you can't do much with it.
Yeah.
So like, I actually started doing some research and figured out that they had the B4 in Japan. So I started going through part numbers and figured out like what stuff fit it. So I found these coilovers that fit and found all these other parts. So I had like all these like lists of part numbers of things that could fit. So every now and then I would search for these part numbers to see if like anybody in the US showed them. So like, I don't know, I had the car for 6 or 7 months and I was searching these numbers and one of the coilover part numbers popped up at a TIN, like TIN, that makes coilovers, like you know, the ones with the green logo.
Yeah.
That there was some in a warehouse here on the West Coast in Benicia.
Okay.
So I called them and I was like, hey, is like a JDM set of coilovers for a 2000 Legacy GT. Like there was no reason for it to be in the US. Like, hey, you guys are showing this part number on your website. Do you have this part? He's like, yeah, we have one set here. He's like, we've never sold one of these. So he went and looked, and apparently somebody had like packed it by mistake.
Oh shit!
In Japan, so he's like, He's like, well, it's going to cost us this much to send it back. He's like, how much you want to pay for it? So I was like, $300. He's like, okay.
You just made them an offer on it?
Yeah.
They weren't even like, well, they're $950.
Nope.
And so do you-
No, just haggle.
Whoever was on the phone should have just been like, yes, they're here. Would you like to buy them?
Yeah. Like the guy didn't know. Like it wasn't in his catalog at all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like that's how the modding on the Legacy started. So,
well,
like,
and the digging through part numbers, apparently.
Yeah. But that's like a lot of that comes from there. Yeah. Like just random stuff like that. So I would dig through other stuff. I found out like the Outback had bigger brake rotors and calipers, and I figured out that I could get these brackets from something else to fit bigger brakes. And that's kind of how like a lot of the part number stuff started, is like I figured I could combine these things to make this better.
Well, I mean, what BMW M does like a lot of the time, or did, was just like take shit off the 7 Series, put it in the 3 Series, like pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, and like it's pretty tried and true method.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, and if you can use an OEM part, it's even better. I mean, and even now, like working on race cars, like you have all these specialized racing parts, and a lot of them aren't really specialized racing parts. So, like, I've worked on one race car that has an X-Track sequential gearbox.
Okay.
So it has all these, like, specialty sensors and all these wiring harnesses that you have to buy just, like, from these guys in the UK. So I was working on one, and we had needed some temperature sensors. So we had used the spare, and we needed to have a spare on the shelf for this race. So the one we took out that was broken, he's like, you know, the guy knows that I can look this stuff up. He's like, figure out how we can get this in the next, you know, like 3 hours.
Yeah.
So I went, looked at a sensor, and I never recognized the connector. The connector type was a Bosch connector type used in a lot of German cars, like in the late 90s. So basically just went online and, you know, picked out some ideas that I had and then started matching up markings. And it ended up that this, you know, extra gearbox that's used in brand new race cars right now uses a coolant temperature sensor from an E36 318 Ti as its fluid temperature sensor here. And Bosch Motorsport basically uses a variant of that sensor. But like a lot of stuff, you know, carries over like that.
Especially because so many OEMs use Bosch shit.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it crosses over. Yeah. Like when we were at the rental car company and like, not that like they would necessarily like quote cheap out on things that were crucial to safety, but like I have such a distinct memory seared in my brain of learning that the seat motor in the Ferrari 599 the dealer wanted $1,200 for was like an $85 Bosch part that goes in for everything.
Yeah, like Fiats and Alphas
all kinds of
and BMWs maybe.
Oh, yeah. And I was like, oh, and then I found out from my Vanquish they wanted $2,700 for a fuel pump.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out the fuel pump is out of the fucking Ford Super Duty.
Yeah.
It's like $187 bucks at AutoZone.
Yep.
It's horse shit.
Yep.
All of this stuff is such horse shit. So like being able to like do that is amazing.
Because I mean, the same way that like an OEM, if they're gonna buy Brembos, if they're gonna put on like a Hellcat, I'm just picking at random. If 2 years later they can say, now we're offering the Challenger Scat Pack with the same brakes, that comes on the Hellcat, it works for advertising, but it also means that they can probably get those parts at a cheaper price initially.
Bigger
and
quantity.
Bosch or whoever, Brembo, whoever, like, they don't want to make 8 million different little individual parts. Like, there's only so many numbers in, you know, in the in the calculator.
Yeah, that's the thing with all this stuff. Like, there's like 3 or 4 usually different sizes of like Brembo calipers, like 4-piston or 6-piston calipers. So most of the cars on the road use one of those 4, and they have the general shape. And what they do is when they tune it for a specific car, they change the piston sizes inside them. So like the external case on many will look similar. It's just they have different size pistons. So some have even size pistons, some have a larger leading piston and a smaller trailing piston, or the opposite. And then some are almost exactly the same with just differences in mounting. So if you take like a 2011 Camaro SS front brake caliper and put it beside a 2013 Tesla Model S front brake caliper, they look exactly the same. And the seals,
like the mounting bracket is just in a slightly different place.
The mounting bracket, the bolts are just different spacings, and that's why, you know, they're different parts. But Brembo will, you know, knock all these things out and then just modify them slightly for each manufacturer as the manufacturer does their tuning and development. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they may get a certain size caliper that has a universal mount, and then, you know, manufacturers will do a few years of development and say, this is what we want it to look like now. But a lot of this stuff is not that unique, you know, even though it is different and prices can range widely.
It's so the day that, like, you learn that exotic cars are not necessarily made of exotic parts.
Like, you know, these things are not special.
No. And I think, you know, not to, like, especially, like, you know, this little red car I've got in the garage, this Countach, like, the parts that, like, it's a big V12, but, like, the valves and shit aren't, like special.
Yeah, like, they're, like...
Like, you know, nothing on it is particularly special, except,
there's just,
like,
a lot of it,
except the body work, I guess, you know, I mean, but, like, the rest of it's just sort of, like, normal old shit.
Well, there's levels. Like, if they're going to make titanium valve stems for something, you know, for a Lamborghini, the company doesn't need to then make, like, use different metallurgy to make... different valve stems for, like, a high performance Ford.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, you use the same ones. But I know what you mean, where you kind of go, oh, I thought it was all bespoke, you know?
Yeah. Well, like, some things, like, in the engine, but, like, all cars, no matter how exotic, like, have a lot of, like, similar functions they need to do, like temperature sensors and pumping fuel and, like, filtering air. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if 80% of the cars on the road use the same fucking HVAC setup.
Oh, it's like, very similar. I mean, if you the blower motors are some of the, like, most common things you can find on stuff. So you'll find, like, the, going back to the Tesla, the Model S uses the same blower motor as, I think, like, a Hyundai Accent.
Isn't the Model S is particularly good at hiding, the fact that it's got a lot of recycled shit.
Because when they started building the Model S, they didn't have any big contracts. Like, they couldn't negotiate with tier one suppliers.
Yeah.
So, like, they had some stuff they did with Ford. They had some stuff they did with Daimler, and Daimler actually partnered with them.
Top off there.
Yeah. Give me a little.
We're
top
on to
off
the
there.
Bookers. We finished. Right. We finished the.
The lightweight
we
Lotus.
Finished the Lotus. Yeah. The Colin Chapman. The English. Booker, Zach, do you want some of this?
I'm good. Booker's is like 44% rising, a little
Booker's
higher.
Booker's is excellent. I like this.
It is
very
good.
It's a little more than normal, but I can't recall.
Somewhere.
Oh.
60?
64.
All right. That's good.
You usually notice,
That's good. But not, it has a smooth. I mean, it has a good feeling.
Yeah, no, it's delicious.
But,
Oh, the blower motors? Yeah. Tesla? Yeah. Oh, Tesla.
Yeah,
they
couldn't negotiate for the big contracts. So, like, switch gear and a lot of the stuff inside is like Mercedes parts. Mm-hmm. So, like, I did
window switches,
stuff like that. He has Mercedes parts, and then they have a bunch of Ford parts. Like, the accelerator pedal on the Model S is from like a 2007 Ford Fusion, stuff like that, because they could buy existing parts and then fabricate their car around it.
Is that more or less of a sin than, like, let's call it a $2 million or $3 million Zonda having a engine block from a 1995 Mercedes SL73? You know, I don't know.
It just depends. Like, stuff you can't see, like that accelerator pedal on the Model S, like, you just see a plastic pad.
Yeah.
Like, and you press it and it does what it needs to do. Like, that's fine. But, like, and even the engine, I would say, in that Zonda, like, if it makes the power, most people that own it aren't going to care.
I think they like that engine. I don't know. I'm actually trying to give Tesla a little bit of the benefit of the doubt in that case.
I think that's completely fine what they did with the Model S.
Yeah.
Like, because if they hadn't done that, if they had spent big money on trying to lure these suppliers to build parts for them, they probably would have spent a whole bunch more money on the Model S, and, you know, the price would have gone up very quickly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can understand that. And, like, all the stuff that's hidden underneath, like, when are you ever going to look at a blower motor unless it breaks?
No, I don't give a shit about a blower motor. Yeah, like, I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's just interesting to talk about how many exotic cars use some really normal ass parts.
Yeah.
Seems like it's the more noticeable it is, the bigger problem. And I realize that sounds dumb, but, like, if the first things you touch when you get in an exotic or performance car, you know, window switches,
well,
HVAC,
door handles are always when they're shared or annoying.
That's egregious. But if Zonda, they make, you know, they make their own, like, underwear. But if everything that you kind of interact with is really special or looks special, and then a couple of things that you don't touch a lot are shared, I find it's less offensive.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And that's like Aston's in the 90s. Like, they use, like, Mazda door handles.
Oh, bro.
Yeah.
I got a list.
Yeah.
I got a list. I got my Vanquish, which is an 03.
Oh, yeah, even then.
Yeah.
Ford parts everywhere.
I've got
Volvo
a Jaguar
parts.
Key.
Yeah.
I've got a Volvo air vents.
Yeah.
I've got Jaguar HVAC.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Here, pull that up. Can you full screen that one? I've got Jaguar stereo, Jaguar HVAC. The seats are made by Recaro. They're the same as the Audi S4, if you'll notice. The B5 or B6 S4. That steering wheel was in like every like non-unbranded European car. It was like Roof, Weiss, Weissman. Like everybody used that steering wheel.
For airbags, and it goes in everything.
I think my least favorite part. I think that's a DB. That's a Jag or something. Is that a Jag? That's a Jag.
This has led me somewhere weird.
You're in the weeds now. But lots of Ford.
I
don't resent it that much, actually.
I mean, now, like at this point, like if you have something that fails, like you could probably pull the part out, look at the part number, and instead of paying some guy in the UK $500, you might be able to go to the Ford dealer and pay $50.
Well, yeah, maybe we did it with the fuel pump.
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other parts.
AutoZone.
Yeah. Why not?
And they've gotten better at hiding stuff because, like, your Aston. You know, it's the buttons like on the center console, like on the HVAC, are like huge.
Yeah.
It's like glaring at you.
That's real 90s Jaguar.
Yeah. It is.
Just stick it in there.
Wait, speaking of being able to go to the other dealers, like you did a nice analysis of like Supra.
Yeah.
And basically that like, because here's the thing. I went to the launch for Supra.
Yeah.
And forgetting the pretense of Supra, right? Yeah. Forgetting what it looks like. Just like, here's a sports car, drive it.
Yeah.
I found it lovely. Yeah. I thought it was great. Have you driven one yet?
I have not, no.
They're great to drive.
Everybody I've talked to that's driven one, and even some of the professional drivers that are, you know, have driven one, everybody's very...
They're fun
like,
as
very,
shit.
Very, very pleased with them.
Yeah, but so, you said they fed us a story that was sort of like... we agreed on a wheelbase and we agreed on a displacement and this, and then we sort of went our own ways.
Yeah.
And but if you actually look at the parts in the car, which I didn't do, but you certainly did, that story doesn't really hold much water, does it?
Yeah, no, it's...
What is your version of the story based on the hardware in the car?
So I went to the BMW EPC. So go on Hoonable, HoonAble.com. That you'll see... Like all my stories there, you'll be able to find the Supra.
I didn't realize you actually used a website.
It used to be my personal blog before I started pitching people.
Oh, so I can read you in long form and not just on Twitter?
Well, then I converted it into a portfolio. So whenever one of my stories goes up, a link goes to it there. So there
this
we
one?
Go. Yeah. That's it, Don Haggerty. So basically, I pulled up the part catalog for the Z4 and for the Supra and just started going down the list. So stuff like that I know matters, like when I tune, like adjust race cars, set up on race cars, you know, camber toe and stuff like that. These adjustments, like, is there a difference here? Mm-hmm. Like, did Toyota actually go in and say, we built our own parts or even just a different adjustment? So what I found out is the Supra, like the complete rear subframe, basically, and all the rear control arms are from the new 3 Series. So, like, all that separate development, like, it's not there. Like, they just took the parts from the 3 Series.
Did they reinforce the subframe on that 3 Series?
Do you think they said, you may use anything from our catalog that you deem appropriate for the Supra?
Yeah, I think what happened is BMW did a lot of development, and then Toyota did, like, kind of what you would do with the race car, basically, where they got a car that was kind of a blank slate, and then they took it on a track, and they're like, well, let's adjust this a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's move the wheels in a little bit here. Let's change the toe a little bit here. So what I found is the rear suspension is all BMW off-the-shelf stuff. The front suspension, other than one of the sets of toe links, is pretty much all from the Z4.
Okay.
So they changed the toe a little bit in the front, for what I remember from the Z4. And they changed the ride height, and I figured that out because BMW uses ride height sensors, and they have a few different calibrations, so they have a few different part numbers for ride height sensors. So if cars are a similar height, they'll have the similar arm for the sensor, but the Z4 and the Supra have different part numbers. So they have adjustments there in ride height and possibly in camber, but there's kind of a whole detailed explanation in that story. But the thing is that they're pretty much the same car as far as suspension setup goes.
Yeah.
And even power, like the reason a lot of people are seeing more power on the dyno for the Supra is because it's probably making more power than what's advertised.
So
like it runs the same ECU, all the same stuff. Like, so
are they not seeing that on the Z4? They only seeing it in the Supra?
Well, they're seeing it above advertised. So, like, the Z4 has the 375 or 385.
But no one's probably dyno testing the Z4.
Well, no, they just put the same engine in both cars and say it makes more. Yeah, that's called a McLaren.
Yeah.
And an Audi. Yeah.
So, I actually did a story on that, too. So, I went through both engines. I think I wrote that for Jalopnik, maybe.
In a McLaren or in the BMW Supra?
The BMW and Z4, when it was supposed to come on. Like, a lot of the parts are shared. And then a lot of the parts in the Supra, they just pulled from the other inline sixes. So, it has, I think, like an oil pump out of an X5.
Yeah.
But, like, the main engine, like, pistons, crankshaft pistons, rods are the same between both engines, the 385 or whatever it is horsepower in the Z4 and the 335 in the Supra. But, like, the turbo is slightly bigger. There's a few other, like, small differences. But even still, the Supra makes more power, I think, than is advertised.
Wait, turbo's bigger in which car, I'm sorry?
On the Z4.
Okay.
So the Z4 is like, I think it's 375 or 385, I can't remember now. And then like the Supra is 335, and there's a 335 Z4. And like the engine, turbo, and everything that are in the Supra are directly from the Z4 in Europe.
Right.
Because they're rated for the same power. So,
it's,
I mean,
it's interesting stuff. Like, it's weird how far, I mean, they went like, when I tell you they went pretty far out of their way to give us this story.
I mean,
I think they saw, I think because they gave us the story after we drove.
Yeah.
And so I think everybody got in the cars and went, you know, these things are great, but they are very, very BMW. Because that's what I said. I go, look, this thing is really nice. Yeah. But like, there's a lot of BMW here, obviously. And I think they really wanted to drive home their point. And this, I think, it wasn't true.
I mean, it's just, that's just how it is. I mean, it's the same thing.
Dude, did you see the launch edition fucking tank on Bring a Trailer?
Oh, I didn't. I saw when it went up on Twitter the other day, but I didn't see it finish.
Bid up to 1,000 under sticker.
No shit.
Yeah, 56K. Wow. The sticker on it is 57.
Yeah, I expected that to go for like 70 or something.
No, I thought it would get 5 or 6 over, and just be like, okay. I
really wanted one,
Stay behind the fucking mic, Bosey. Oh, pardon me. You're on a radio show.
Pardon me.
For fuck's sake. Usually we put people with headphones on so that they can hear themselves when they get away from the mic, but not you. It's because you've been at racetracks.
I remember we were on a text thread with like Parker Kligerman and Lee Keen for Proving Grounds, which is on Sundays, by the way. Yeah. And the launch edition gets advertised, and Parker's like, "What do you guys think?" And we're just like, "Do not do this."
Yeah. Oh, like, what, he was gonna bid?
No, not bid on Bring a Trailer. He was like, "Should I?" He was like, "Should I buy one? Do you think it's gonna appreciate? Do you think this is gonna be a thing?" We're like, no, it's gonna be a car that's painted black.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a good car. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Well, all the NASCAR guys. So I mean, Kligerman, he drives a Toyota, so I'm sure that's why he was looking at it. But
probably,
like, there's a whole bunch of Supras rolling around Mooresville right now because like all the NASCAR guys like are buying them.
Yeah,
I think they're good looking. I bet they're fun. Yeah. Like, I have nothing against the car itself. I just thought that was like
no, if you go out, special enough. Yeah, if you go spend $52,000 on a regular Supra, you're getting you're absolutely getting money's worth, 100%,
definitely.
But it's not. On something that's not a limited product, you shouldn't spend a dime over it. I think the hype has ended. Yeah. There's a red one sitting right here, at a dealer, under a tent outside. It's
going to
be there for fucking 6 months, I guarantee. Because they probably won $80,000 for the stupid thing.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
I haven't looked yet to see if they've started coming across the auctions, but I've seen my first one in person the other day. I saw it, like, you know, because they're,
it's little, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very small. It's
small.
I mean, I've seen it at the auto shows and stuff, but seeing it on the road, like rolling beside like an F-150, it's like, damn.
It's
like,
basically the same size as an 86.
Yeah, it
pretty
is.
Much.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's shorter.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. Like, seeing it at an auto show, you know, it's got its display and lifted up. It doesn't seem that small, but like, when it's on the road, it's like, wow,
it's a little car.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, that's why it weighs, you know, it doesn't weigh a lot, and you know, it's you know, pretty responsive.
Yo, get in the super chat if you're with us live. It's probably, it's late as fuck for a lot of you. So
what is it now?
East Coast.
Yeah, East Coast. Oh,
it's 11:30. Yeah. So if you're with us, get in the super chat. We're gonna do a few more minutes and then can go to your questions before we get out of here, because neither Bose nor I has had dinner.
Yeah.
And he just got off a flight, so we're not gonna fucking kill him tonight. Oh, so taking Tesla at the Nürburgring.
Oh, so
we have to talk about this because it's funny.
Yeah. So I made some comments about this on Twitter yesterday, and then I woke up this morning and they're just like notifications from like all over the place, like Tesla fans, Tesla detractors, like everybody's got an opinion.
Yeah.
So like the gist of it is like, and I've talked about this in the past, is with these records, like they're are a few official testing sources and there are a few unofficial testing sources. So like El Laguna, which is one of the places where, like, you know, the Tesla has been tested. There's no like official like testing procedure or certification procedure. Like all the Laguna records are just kind of written down. And most of them are when Motor Trend rents the track and Randy Popes goes out and drives a car and they post the time in their video. And that's used kind of as the citation for the fastest car at Laguna Seca.
Pretty much just accepted practice.
Yeah, like everybody knows that, you know, like Popes is not going to like mess around. Like they're going to act, you know, he's going to act as an independent party and Motor Trend's renting the track out. But like going from that is like, on some days, they might go to the track and it's 60 degrees. On some days, they might go to the track and it's 95 degrees. On some days, it might be slightly damp. Some days, it's not. So, like, all these outside conditions affect these records. And the same thing with the Nürburgring, and especially so because...
Especially.
Yeah, because Laguna Seca is short. So, like, you'll do, you know, a minute and a half or 2 minute lap, you know, in that range, depending on how fast the car is, where the Nürburgring is, you know, 8 or 9 times longer.
Yeah, and it could be raining on half the track.
Correct, yeah, because it's so spread out. So, like, all these Nürburgring laps, like the KBA, which is, like, I don't know, like the DOT or something like that of Germany, like, they have some official categories during official record runs where they, like, list cars. So the Taycan or Taycan, I still haven't figured out how that...
Taycan. Yeah, Taycan.
Taycan, yeah. So...
And by the way, I just so you know, the Lotus Electric, EVIJA.
Yeah.
Just take it away. It's Avaya.
Avaya.
I learned that from the Lotus guys. Okay, continue.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. So
Taycan.
Taycan. So the Taycan did a run and it was, you know, publicity here in like August or something, record run for four-door electric sedan. The only issue is that the KBA doesn't have a category for four-door electric sedan. So like Porsche just made that category up. They're like, we're just going to do this. And like they set that record.
Casual acceptance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like first of all, like that record doesn't really exist, but it exists in their mind. And like, you know, and like that's the thing with like press release journalism. Like they'll put that press release out and it's going to be on 50 sites and 50 blogs. Because nobody
maybe it gets clarified later, but not like, nearly nobody as much like, as the original story.
Yeah, like for stuff like that, little quick hits, like you exciting, like nobody's going to do like background research on it. And like it's, and like, you know, and that's just.
Especially when there's a video and the video is presumably real. And so you go, okay, no one's going to be like, wait, is that a real record?
Yeah,
like,
but they sent out the press release.
Well, I mean, the first record is always the first record. Like, you know, in 40 years, there'll be a lot of them.
Someone does have to set the pace.
Yeah, correct.
And it's fucking fast.
It's very fast.
It is
very
fast.
Do you watch the video?
Yeah, it's very fast.
He's mobbing.
So what I, and that's the thing, what I got out of that, like, the time is very good, but the main thing that most people should get out of that is that it was able to do a lap successfully at full pace for the whole lap.
Totally.
Like that's like what you should get like out of that. Not that it's at this time and now the Model S is going to get all this stuff and do this time. And if the Model S is able to get close to that time or beat it, like hats off to them.
That would be extraordinary. But
yeah, it would be very extraordinary. But apparently they have some new motors and stuff. But that's the thing is like most of these electric cars on the Nürburgring, unless they were like one-off specials like the VW IDR and stuff like that, most of them couldn't complete a whole lap.
I mean, haven't people tried to run stock Model S's on the Nürburgring and been fully unsuccessful at it?
Yeah, so I know that...
Can you look up Nürburgring times and see if on the Wikipedia if anyone's run a Model S in a complete lap
and
at any time?
Jalopnik had a story today that they think that there's an asterisk basically that Elon has built in where he's bringing a 7-seat Tesla so that he'll be setting the 7-seat sedan
record. That's it. So that's a whole new level. So he's bringing one with those seats in the hatch, you know. But there was a Model S P85D, like a 2014 or 15, that did complete a lap. And I think it was like 8.5 minutes. So whatever.
Right, well, if it can complete a lap, that's so, a starting place.
But it was modified for like extra cooling. And if you look at the Tesla, if the Model S that Tesla is doing at the Nürburgring route, like it doesn't look terribly different. But if you start to look at the details, you'll notice things. So you'll notice that like the front entry for the cooling system is like almost double the size now. So like the grill in the middle, there's a splitter on the front that's been expanded, stuff like that.
2015, a P85D did it in 850.
That's it. Okay. That's the car I was thinking of. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean,
something Porsche has pointed out a lot with the Taycan is like the 0-60, but they're like, you can do it 26 times in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're really saying we can perform at the same level over and over or for a long duration, like on the Nürburgring versus
the Tesla. That's how their gas cars are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember, you know, you can launch a Turbo S 100 times in a row and the car couldn't possibly give a fuck.
Yeah, that's exactly, and that's the thing that people should take away from this, which almost nobody that likes replying to me or like throwing stuff at me on Twitter. And
no,
like
what I saw is a consistent seven minutes of someone beating the shit out of an electric car.
Like if you can do that, then that's a step forward.
Yeah,
and like if you can do that and repeat it to do it for multiple laps, that's going to be another step forward. And you know, if you can do that and be fast, like it's just steps forward. But that's, you know,
that'll be the test. This will definitely be on Top Gear in a year, maybe two. But they're going to drag race Taycan and model, you know, P100.
Yeah.
P100 will win to 130 or whatever, and they'll go, let's do it again.
Yeah.
And again. And again. And, like, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But and I think Porsche is doing a test / publicity stunt where they run one for 24 straight hours, only stopping to charge it at a track at Daytona or something.
They did it at Nardo.
Nardo. Yeah. I think they did it somewhere over there already.
They did it already.
Yeah, okay, they already did it. Yeah.
What? Porsche track, Nürburgring. The model. Okay, the actual cars that Tesla sent over there. By the way, did you see one on the expired California tag?
I was the one that pulled that up initially. So like,
you see that shit, Zach?
Yeah.
What
the so, Model S? Tell me.
Yeah. So like, I was like, I got to the house last night. I was like 8 or 9 o'clock, and I was like, let me pull out my laptop, see what's going on. So all these people had tweeted at me, and I saw these pictures. So I was like, let me run this tag through my little Carfax deal.
This is the Model S spotted in front of the Piston Klasse at the Nürburgring.
Yeah.
Which is Sabina Schmitz's family's restaurant where you eat steak on a stone.
Yeah. So I pulled up the tag and like had it like reversed. So I did a window code and found out it was the 2017 Model S, which is kind of weird. And I posted that up and I can't remember who it was now, but somebody that follows me went and did the full report, and they found out that it was like a 2017 Model S that was a lemon buyback that Tesla had bought back based on the VIN I had posted. So later, like after we dug through it, we found out that it was like a Model S that was a lemon buyback, and which is not a terrible idea, like using it as a development car because they don't have to build a whole new car.
Yeah.
So my guess is that Tesla had to buy this car back because it had some kind of issue. Then they stripped everything out other than the chassis, and now they just stick all these kind of development parts on it.
In and of itself is not a problem. Yeah. But if that's what you were going to do, okay, if you're going to base your development mule on a buyback lemon law car, would you send it to the Nürburgring with an expired license plate on it?
In June too,
Dude, it's got a fucking traceable license plate. You just type it in, and it says lemon on it. Like, what kind of a fucking idiot are you to do
Very
that?
True.
Yeah, that's like stuff like that is just like discrepancies like that, like you would think that people would take care of. And like, it didn't have a front plate until this morning, which, you know, it's who knows what they were thinking or what they were doing. They just had a rear plate, even though I think front plates are required here, right?
Well, so yeah, I mean, in general, this is just kind of a dumb situation.
Yeah.
You can get a temporary registration for this thing in Germany to test it.
Yeah,
right? It's
and that's
good
what
for
they
30 days, and that's what they
eventually
have now.
Did. Yeah,
but when the car got there,
it
was literally sitting on this expired, because I could tell the sticker was blue. It wasn't fucking yellow.
Right.
So it was an expired sticker on this tag that was just traceable to a lemon law buyback.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, like, all right, fine. You got your temporary reg, but you let everybody take pictures of this plate that leads to a lemon law claim, idiot.
They should have used like one of their manufacturer tags, which are not traceable at all. Like the MFG tags, like you can't trace those at all because they're not assigned to a specific car.
It's just like
it says Jersey.
Yeah, exactly. They should just use one of those, like what you see on the press cars and stuff.
Yeah, so like hardcore Tesla fucking bros are all, it's just a development mule. What's the big deal? Everyone's got development mules. It's like, it's as obviously Elon going, send some cars over there right now. Yeah. Get some fucking wide body kits and gurney flaps going.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Like all these people tweeting at me, like, well, this is better than this. And like a lot of it is like, hey, like I said this like 2 days ago or 3 days ago, like all these people tweeted, well, the Taycan, like yesterday I hadn't mentioned the Taycan or Taycan, whatever it is, like at all the whole day.
Yeah.
Or even today, like I was just talking about the Tesla, the one at Laguna Seca, one at Nürburgring, and just kind of, you know, sharing my observations on Twitter. And all these Tesla fans were tweeting at me about the Taycan. I was like, I have not mentioned this thing once. And they're like, well, the Taycan did this and they had a roll cage in it. I was like, that's fine.
Yeah,
they put like, roll cages in those cars.
Yeah, like I said that, like, you know, their record doesn't count because it's not an official category yet. Like, I, you know.
No, it's just the humor in the situation is that it's so obvious he decided to do this 5 days ago. Just said, like, get it done.
Yeah.
And, like, didn't understand, like, think of, like, have you been in the Nürburgring?
I have not, no.
Zach's been. Yeah. I've been.
Yeah.
The resources that the OEMs put into this shit.
It's wild. I mean, I know how the industry pool works and all that other stuff. I know a lot of these guys that work on like OEM stuff that also work on race cars.
Show up and run.
Yeah. Like these guys, if they want to do something like this, like they'll pick out like 4 or 5 cars and then they'll take them over there. And then for like 12 or 15 or 16 weeks, they'll just test every day.
Yeah.
Whenever they have industry pool time, they'll just test, take data, test, take data, test, take data. And then after they've completed that 12 or 15 or 16 weeks, then they'll actually attempt a run. And then they'll record the run. And after they know it's all good, then they'll do PR stuff. But, like,
but also, we're not talking about the car you're buying right now either.
Yeah.
I mean, the cars they've got, like, all right, maybe this is a mule for, like, my theory is they will come out with some wide-body, downforcing Nürburgring package. They'll build 501, and that'll be that.
Yeah.
Which, and it'll have plaid mode, because Elon's... Blake had a great tweet today that said, I think Elon's only seen Spaceballs.
That's true, because that's where all the jokes go. That's where all the jokes go. Which, I mean, it's not singling him out, because other people have done it too. There's a GTR Nürburgring edition. There's all these other cars.
Yeah.
And that's fine. That's the thing that I think that Elon's going to miss here, is that all these other manufacturers have done these special editions. Like, he has an easy way out. Like, he can just do the special edition. Just follow the template that the other manufacturers have done, just so they can satisfy the minimum to call it a record. Yeah. But I think he's going to let his hubris kind of get over it.
Yeah.
And he's just going to do, like, some crazy wild things.
It's a weird
spend
argument
a bunch
that's
of
happening
money.
That yeah. doesn't need to happen. Yeah, 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 and yeah, all it yeah. will do is make yeah. them look worse.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
like I think could, Tesla yeah. builds really cool, interesting, fast, exciting cars. Porsche, same thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's just like this weird fight broke out, and everyone's like, why are you guys...
Hey, by the way, excuse me, folks. Do you remember when they cared about autonomy like a week ago?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Porsche comes out like, our electric car is for driving with your hands really fast. And Tesla's like, to the Nürburgring!
Yeah. We're going to drive with our hands now. Like, we're not self-driving motivation, you know, anymore. But
be a one-upper.
Because the hype machine needs to move forward.
Yeah.
It's because the hype machine's got to go.
But what is interesting is, I wonder if this hype conversation will reach outside the bubble that we exist in. Like, will people that have money and are going to go buy a luxury electric vehicle, will they even hear about which one won a record that they made up that week?
I think that some people will hear about it, because there's some people that are bench racers that just like to compare numbers.
Mm.
But for the vast majority of people, is they want the shiny new thing.
Yeah.
And the shiny new thing is the Porsche.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Model S was the shiny new thing for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
But now there's a Porsche, and they can look cool in the Porsche, but be green.
Yeah.
Oh, they're going to sell a bucket.
The question is, because the brand loyalty bought the least, the early adopter was the first Model S. The brand loyalty leased the second Model S. But will those people put up with the quality and quality issues, or will they go, you mean I can have this sort of future thing from a company that, like, has been building cars for 60 years?
Yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yeah, I mean, that's, there's, I think that the Porsche Taycan, I think 40 or 50% of the buyers are, like, standard Porsche buyers.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, they own 911s, they own this or that, and, you know, they may have currently owned an SUV, or they may own, like, a hybrid BMW or something, and, like, or may own a Tesla, but they're, like, Porsche loyalists. So I think, like, at least 30 or 40% of that is Porsche people that just want of another Porsche, and now they have a family car.
Yeah.
And I think a certain portion, maybe 20 or 30% will move from a Model S or Model X because it's the new cool thing. So like people, especially here on the West Coast, is they want the cool new thing, but they don't want to look like they're terrible people.
Yeah, yeah.
So like they'll, you know, like a lot of people drove Priuses in the mid-2000s because there was no other option to look like you were friendly to the environment. And then the Tesla came.
You know that Leno bit? That's a great, it's a classic Leno bit. Leno has a bit about the Prius. He's like, the Prius is ugly so that you can go to Rodeo Drive and say, do you see?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm doing for you?
Yeah, I'm giving things up. Yeah, but that was the thing with the Tesla is, like, they could go into a car that was quick, like in a straight line, that was comfortable, you know, had decent seats.
It
and
was
stuff
a Bentley
like that.
Prius. It was that's all it was.
Now you can floss and be outwardly green.
Now you can have like
on your way to your private jet.
Exactly. It's like basically it's like driving a you know a Panamera Turbo or whatever, but you can feel like you're saving the earth because it's electric. And like there's a lot of people that drive.
Well, imagine you're in the Porsche like dealership for the Taycan and you're like, what do you have? You have these options are nice. I like these colors. That's pretty good. And you get Bluetooth screens. Like, we have that, sir. That's standard. You're like, wow, the Tesla had that. You're like, how many SEC investigations do you have? And they're like, none this year. Yeah. Like, ooh, I do like that as well.
And I'm sure that the Taycan, you'll be able to do, you know, paint the sample and all this other stuff. Where like Tesla now is like, we'll give you 7 colors at launch, and then maybe we'll do 4 later, and maybe we got 3 now. Like,
I think,
you know,
I read in Niedermeyer's book that there was something about the Model 3, like the cost of adding red was fucking astronomical.
Weird.
To be able to offer red.
Huh.
Like, I was just, I don't know. There was, I'm blanking on the exact specifics of it, but it was something ridiculous.
I know they set up a special area, and I had never really looked into it deeply, but I know they set up a special area, like a special tent for the red color. So, like, people had, like, there's these guys that are, like, out there in planes and helicopters taking pictures of the Tesla factory, and it looked like a murder scene. Like, there was this one tent that was just red everywhere. And that was a special area they set up to paint the Model 3s red.
Dexter leased some of our space.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Did you see that Fenske's video of the paint quality on his Model 3?
So last month, this kind of worked out really well. So last month, I was at Pebble, and I ended up on the same program as Jason.
Uh-huh.
It was me and Jason and Kyle Kennard from Ruined Track.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Kyle was on the show. He's great.
Kyle's awesome. Yeah. So it worked out really well. But like, I had never met Jason in person. Like, I know him from online and stuff like that. And we had just talked like through email and stuff, or Twitter.
You probably became best friends in two seconds.
Yeah.
Right?
So like, we're just like the whole trip, we're just nerding out. Like, you know, we're there with Nissan, and so it was a good experience to spend some time with Jason.
Yeah. You guys are like long lost brothers.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
But yeah, we had a very good time. It was very, very enjoyable. But
cool.
Jason's cool.
Let's get some audience shit before we get out of here. I'm like super hungry.
Yeah,
oh my God,
I'm starting to get
food.
Hungry too.
All right, because we're gonna go get food after this. It's late for us. It's probably later for them. Punch in. I can't see
almost
shit.
Midnight at my house. I can't see it.
All right. Let's see. A couple people who just love Bozy.
Thank you. Thank you guys.
Nick
I appreciate it.
You're a legend. Anthony says something to be said for buying a car with the preconceived notion that it's a piece of shit and being pleasantly surprised. I went from an R53 Cooper S. I went to an R53 Cooper S from a Corolla. Oh, presumably people told him his Mini was going to be a piece of shit. He was surprised. Yeah. Well, don't worry. Just keep driving. It'll get there.
That's been my experience, too. Trying to repair them and people just refusing. And
friend of mine has one of these with 160,000 miles on it. Hasn't broken. It works.
Incredible.
It is a miracle.
Yeah,
it is an anomaly.
Knock on wood. Yeah.
Thaddeus
don't jinx them. Yeah.
Fell the fuck apart about 85,000 miles. Yeah. And mine, I bought mine new. I had an 06 JCW, and I bought it in 06, end of 06, brand new. It was like the last one on the lot.
Yeah.
I drove it. The warranty was 50,000 miles. I sold it with 49,840 miles. to a guy that I thought was just a regular guy, but I later realized was actually an exporter who most certainly sent it to the Middle East somewhere.
It works. So sidebar there, just Minis. So the team I work with in IMSA, they run Honda Civic TCR cars, but they also run Minis in World Challenge. And they used to run Minis in IMSA when they were allowed there. So Mini fans are some of the most dedicated fans I've ever met. So, like, this team now...
They are seriously dedicated.
Right. Like, this team in IMSA now is not running any Minitas at all. So all the cars are running are Honda, you know, Civic Type Rs. But all the Mini fans they had from, like, the past decade that, you know, used to support the Minis now support the Hondas
just because
they love the team so much, because they still run the Minis in World Challenge. Like, these people come to the races and, like, they'll come, like, you know, like, you know, like
full gear.
Yeah, like, you know, and, like, they'll support the team just because the team at some point, either in their past or in another series, supports Mini. They're supporting the team. Like,
these
it's
are
really,
people that spend 50 G's on a 1.8 liter hatchback with a straight face.
And I've met a few of them that have, like, those GPs and all these other cars, and they'll come and, like, they'll, you know, they're just, like, so enthusiastic. Like, it's like, I don't know, like, it's
Mini,
cool.
Mini people are a thing.
Yeah, like, they're, like, they're very, like, it's like a cool crowd, and, like, they're, like, all into it.
It is. If you want to buy into a culture, get yourself a fucking Mini. Oh, yeah. Their marketing team, when I had my Mini, and when it was new and still kind of, like, under the, you know, warranty program, the shit that would show up at my house was always really fun. I mean, it was like, it wasn't anything of value, but it was like t-shirts and, like, just little boxes of, like, you know, things that would, like, pop up and open and, like, were colorful and, like, really, 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 really good branding.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Very smart people who were doing their shit. I don't love their cars now, but at the time, the R53 was the jam though, when it was new.
Totally. Yeah.
Tyler says, can we talk about how rad the Mitsubishi Pajero Evo is? Thoughts on importing one versus trying to build something similar on a 20K budget in the States?
So it's an awesome car. I mean, it's, you know, Pajero is the same thing as the Montero here, but we never got the Evo version. So you can buy a Montero here, but you'll never be able to do anything on a reasonable budget to get close to the Pajero Evo. So, like, if a Pajero
like a
Evo
Dakar
is what you,
homologation special,
if a,
basically.
If a Pajero Evo is what you want, you just should import one. Yeah, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, you can throw bunches and bunches of money at a Montero, and you still won't be able to set it up to be similar to a Pajero Evo. Like,
I talked about these, I don't know, last year or whenever, and I'll correct myself very publicly. I incorrectly said that it was an Evo motor. It's not. It's a V6.
No. It's the same V6 that we got in the Monteros here. It's just tuned.
Yeah.
So it's either a 3-liter or a 3.5-liter V6.
Same as the Diamante?
Yep. Same motor. Yeah. Same as the Diamante. Same as the 3000 GT.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. When I see them for sale from the importers, like, if you want one, like, I don't think my guy Sean Morris, Top Rank Importers, I don't think he has one right now, but like, if you want one,
you can request that he'll get you one.
And they're always, the importers always, they pass through. Like, they're not expensive. Like, your budget's 20K.
Yeah,
you can, I think, find a Pajero Evo is like 12.
Yeah,
they're,
you can find
expensive.
One for 12 or 13, I think.
Yeah. It's a total nerd special, and they look really cool, but in actual money, they're not expensive.
No, not very expensive at all.
In other Mitsubishi news, the Delica is done.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I'm getting it tomorrow. Crook texted me today, and he said he is so... Apparently, there's a guy there who got real into the project and, like, detailed and refinished, like, all my plastics.
That's
and he
awesome.
Said, he said it looks incredible.
Yeah, whoa.
So he wouldn't even send me a picture. He said, doing, like, an overhaul and reveal when you come down.
That's
tomorrow.
Awesome. Yeah, because you got... Is yours a diesel?
Yeah. It's an Exceed Turbo D.
Yeah. They have the most awesome names. So if you ever look at the catalogs...
Oh, yeah. Delica Star Wagon Turbo
like,
D.
They have, like, the most awesome names. So these are, like, what, like a 92?
It's a 91.
91, yeah.
40,000 kilometers.
Yeah, I remember I saw the picture on Instagram, and, like, I figured it was around that range. But they have, like, the most awesome names. And, like, those are not terribly expensive. And, like, they use a lot of Montero parts.
Totally.
Yeah.
There's a website called DelicaUSA.com that shows you all the equivalent Montero part numbers.
Yeah. There's, I helped a guy actually track down some tie rod ends for a Delica.
Yeah.
And they're from the 3000 GT.
Awesome.
Yeah. So he's like, find the stuff. So he, like, messaged me on Twitter or Instagram or somewhere. I was like, let me see what I can find out.
They definitely did not put that in the GT catalog. They were like, by the way, same tie rod ends as the Delica.
If you have a broken tie rod end,
We replaced I replaced the shocks with new KYBs and replaced the upper ball joints, and it was $340.
Yeah, it's amazing. I sold it last year, 1989 Montero. So it was a first gen Montero, and that was like the whole thing. It was like I bought on Rock Auto brand new Brembo rotors, new shocks, new brake lines, like all this other stuff was $83. Yes. Like something like ridiculous. Like it was just cheap, like ridiculously cheap.
Riley says, how do I convince my girlfriend she doesn't want a $6,000 Mini Cooper for a daily reliable college student car? Well, it's not reliable.
See our earlier conversation from 5 minutes ago. Yeah.
$6,000 gets you a great Japanese car.
Oh, yeah.
From the mid-2000s. Sammy says, Matt, you've driven both Alpha 4C and the Lotus Evora. Which would you buy and why? Evora all day and 75 times on Sunday. Make sure it's a supercharged model. There was a lot of other things that were changed when they added the supercharger beyond just the supercharger. If you can afford it, a 400 is the motherfucking jam. The jam. And they are lovely. The Evora has all the good things about the 4C, except it doesn't suck.
Yeah. It doesn't have Italian reliability.
And it's not Italian. Yeah. Thomas says, what is the most fun on four wheels for $10,000?
I mean, it that depends. Like,
where do you
want
to?
What do you define as fun?
Yeah, like, do you want to go, you know, just have a little curvy roads? Do you want to do track days? Do you want to go off-road? I mean, that's kind of a hard question, you know, to answer without knowing some specifics.
I did have someone contact me today and confirm with their own photo evidence that a Safari LS400 is indeed nothing more than strut spacers and big wheels and tires.
Oh yeah, that's a lot of these Safari builds now are like 1 inch or 2 inch spacers and big tires. Like it's not an actual build.
What kind of damage will that do if you actually off-road it, if any?
So it depends on where it's placed and where the spacers are placed. So it's not going to really do any damage, but it's, you know, the shock valving is set up for the factory ride. So it's not set up to be off-roaded. So like your 911.
Yeah.
You know, like.
No, I have shocks that are for off-roading. My 911 rides like a Raptor.
Yeah. So like somebody like Keen, you know, he's a professional driver. So he has experience with, you know, like dampers and valving and, you know, like just setup adjustments for, you know, tow and camber and things like that. And the tires you're using, like all of that goes into an equation where, like, I'm sure he either sits down or he has somebody like me that he's worked with in the past where, like, they look at the numbers and say, we're going to use this, this, and this. And then they send the stuff back to the damper manufacturer. Or you have knobs where you can adjust compression and rebound and stuff like that. Mm. And these guys have just put spacers on. Is they just go out there and the car just bounces around. Eventually, it'll wear out the dampers or the shocks, whatever, you know, whatever you have on there. And it's not going to perform in a manner that it should perform on off-road. Like, you know, it'll bottom out and do these things. Even though it's raised off when it enters something, it'll still bottom out because the shocks aren't, you know, able to support that pressure.
Yeah. To clarify, if this dude meant a sports car, 10K... You know, you're talking Civics, Miatas, that kind of stuff.
For 10K, if you want a sports car, I would get an NC Miata, get the revised version of the NC Miata with the 6-speed, which is like 2010 and up. Mm-hmm. And you can get one of those now for like $7,000.
Perfect.
And you can put a fusion motor, like a 2.5 liter. It bolts right up because it's the same motor as a 2 liter. It bolts right up. You can find one for $250.
What?
And you can pay somebody $1,500 to put one in.
So and how much more power do you get?
It goes from...
160 or like
160-ish to like 190.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like for like a $2,000 investment, that's like paying somebody to put it in.
Yeah.
It's the same. Literally, all the outside stuff is the same.
Just the displacement.
Just the displacement is different, and the intake manifold is different, but you can like slightly modify the intake manifold so it bolts in.
Amazing. There you go.
NC Miata with the 2.5 liter swap.
There you go.
You probably find one that's already swapped for like $8,000.
Perfect. Anthony says that I mentioned a place wants to post freelance articles in the past for potential exposure. What was it? I think I meant like Kinja, honestly.
Yeah, it's...
But you can also like roadandtrack.com is looking for content. You can email Bob Sorkanarich, which I don't... It's like... I don't want to say his email. You can get him on Twitter. You can get at him or Travis Okulski. Like, you find a website or an outlet that you like. Typically, their editor or their associate editor, deputy editor, is like easily accessible via social media.
Oh, yeah.
And like, send a DM and be like, here, I wrote this.
Yeah.
Do you like it? Do you not like it? If you like,
you just have to have examples. So, like, if you don't have an example of your writing anywhere out there, most people aren't going to give you the time of day. Like,
You
either set up a personal blog or use Kinja. Like, that's basically how I started. Is like, I had my own little personal blog, And I was on like message boards and forums. And I was like, let me try and post this on a blog and see if people read it. And people read it. I was like, all right. And then after a while, I just started pitching it, you know, to get paid for it.
And take my advice. If you want to try writing today, start with something that is not just car reviews.
Yeah, everybody does car reviews. And that's like the main benefit I have is I have a niche that's not car. I do occasional
Your
car
niche
reviews.
Rules.
But it's like it's a good niche because I can pitch to anybody and it's different.
Yeah. Luke says, I've heard a lot of hype about the Camaro 1LE. Is it as good as everyone says? I think so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great
1LE
car.
1LE is awesome. I mean, any level you get it at, even the small motor is like, it's a good car.
Remember, we were at NCM when we were racing.
Yeah.
I had Matt Busby, because I hadn't been at NCM in forever.
Yeah,
I had Matt Busby
like
lap
their safety
me
car or whatever.
In their safety car, which was the four-cylinder turbo 1LE. Yeah. Yo, and he was mobbing.
Yeah, they have the whole setup from the bigger cars, and you can make all the adjustments. So, like, you won't have the power. But like a four-cylinder 1LE is actually a really good car, like if you want to get started on, like, driving on a track.
Yeah.
Because you get all the adjustments you can make on the suspension, but you don't have a whole bunch of power like where you can end up in a wall.
Yeah. He was actually going pretty good. Yeah. So I mean the 1LE like handling package on all the motors is it is very good. Let's see. Okay. Is this the same Luke? Okay. Thoughts on the viability of running an older Formula Renault for track days. Apparently you can get a vintage Formula Ford or newer Formula Renault 2 liter for similar cash. If the choice was yours, what would you have and ride? Do you have any open wheel experience with this?
A little bit. I would probably do the Formula Ford. I mean, the Formula Renault is nice too, just from like a crew chief mechanic perspective, just because parts availability and, just because there's more people that know how to work on them. But even the Formula Renault too, like, that's not a huge difference. So if like that's what you prefer, it's fine. Like, but I would probably lean to the Formula Ford. Larry Webster, that runs like VP of content at Hagerty, he owns a Formula Ford. So like during the historic race, he actually raced in the race.
He raced those. Sam Smith has had a Formula Ford.
Used to have one,
But Larry owns Gurney-built Formula Ford. And they're fun little cars, and you can, you know, do all kinds of fun stuff with them. But I think, you know, I would probably go Formula Ford just because most vintage shops or crews that you can rent to support your racetrack will have more experience than the Formula Renault. But
good call.
The Formula Renault is not that much more expensive.
I drove a Formula One Renault once. The engine's not that special. No, like, it's a whatever.
It's, like I said, it's fairly similar. Yeah.
If you're in America,
get the Ford.
Don't get a French engine if you don't. You know what I mean? If it's not crucial to your experience, you know, just buy a Citroen SM
for your cruising car.
Brian says, a while ago I responded to the question with, one fast daily driver is better than a slow daily and a slow sports car.
That's true.
I agree. I bought a Giulia TI Sport and love it. Oh, thank you. All right, cool. Good.
That's
Giulia TI Sport is fun.
That's a really good car. I hope the best for you. It's a really fun car when it works.
I agree. Gravity Drift says, are R32 GTRs worth the price as something to experience, or is there a better experience for the money? I really like R32 GTRs. Yeah. I've driven a bunch of different ones, and they are really, really fun. They drive much more modern than their age would actually indicate. They're equal parts analog and sort of techie. Yeah. The engines are really, really lovely. And is there a better they don't have as much curb appeal as you think they do.
Yeah.
Most people just see it as an old Nissan.
Yeah,
they don't really notice.
Fancy Sentra or something.
And then when people do see it, they kind of like lose their shit. Yeah. Especially
Lee Keen is building one currently.
Yeah, he bought his from Sean, same place I bought mine from. And like, I think if you think you might like one, like if you liked it in video games and you like how it looks and driving on the right doesn't bother you, it more than lives up to what you think it's gonna be. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so like a collector grade one for $40,000, like maybe it's actually, I think it's probably a $35,000 or $40,000 driving experience for a nice one. They're fun, dude. They are fun.
Yeah. I mean, right now, if you get one for $35,000 and drive it for a year, like don't put a whole bunch of miles on it.
Keep
them
stock.
You're gonna get $35,000 back out of it and possibly more.
Yeah.
Like they're starting to go up At least until, you know, the rest starts being able to be.
I very strongly recommend keeping powertrain stock. Oh, like, if you must modify, limit it to coilovers and tasteful wheels from a really good brand like BBS or Work or TE37s. Keep it like.
Or 1552.
If you're gonna, or 1552. but if you're going to modify those and then, like, it needs to be with the right parts. Otherwise, if people are like, ooh, it's like poison. Yeah,
no well, because if you look at a car that's a tuner car, whereas, you know, popular with that crowd, and you see cheap parts on it, you're going to go, what else? What else?
Let's see. Dante Zero says, speaking of cool electrics, thoughts on California's Lightning motorcycles? And there, I've never seen Lightning motorcycles. Let's go to the next question, Zach. Will you look that up?
Yep.
Ren says, my 97 Miata engine blew and I need to swap it. Budget $3,500 and I do not have skill. What fits in a 97 Miata, Bozy?
An LS fits, but if you for $3,500, the cheapest LS swap I've done in a Miata, so like not counting labor, is about $4,200. So like that's completely out of it.
All right,
like you could get an old Boss Frog kit to get a 302 out of a Ford.
Okay,
so like get, you know, like out of a Fox body, get a 302. And
what about just better four cylinders? Can you put a newer Miata engine in there for $3,500 or not really?
You can, but it's not going to be
this fusion thing.
Not going to be a huge bump. That doesn't fit. The direct injection pump on the back of the head interferes with the firewall on the older Miatas. Like, you can do, there's some guys doing a Ecotec, GM Ecotec swaps that are about 200 horsepower. But even that, like, without skill, if you're going to have to pay somebody $3,000 or $4,000 at least, plus the $3,000 or $4,000 for the kit on the motor.
There's so there's a Honda K24 swap from those guys, but I don't know if you can do it for $3,500.
Same deal. Like, just the kits usually are $3,000 to $4,000 because it requires some fabrication.
Yeah.
And plus, if you don't have the skill and you're paying somebody, that's another $3,000 or $4,000 in labor.
Yeah.
So, like, stock motor, you could go to a slightly newer 1.8 liter, maybe get 10 or 15 horsepower. But, you know, unfortunately, if you don't have the skill in that range, you're not going to get a whole lot.
If you don't got the skill, you got the cash.
Pretty much.
One or the other, dude. That's Pay an expert.
That's
What's up with this Lightning motorcycle, Zach?
It's got a 100-mile range, 168 foot-pounds of torque, 200 horsepower.
Oh.
Revs to 10.5, and it will go 218 if you have high-speed gearing and a fairing on it.
Wow.
That sounds a little dangerous.
Sounds gnarls. Pull the picture up. It's very sport bikey. It looks like a, you know, sort of like a 600 or a 1,000 sport bike, like a Gixxer or Ninja.
Yep.
Good-looking bike.
I mean, those,
is this
specs?
From, made in L.A.?
It weighs 500 pounds. I think it's at San Jose.
Never seen it before.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, never seen it before. I don't know.
Hey, if you work at Lightning, hit me up. I mean, it looks rad. Yeah. Like, I see people in LA, like, I see electric bikes. I see the Zeros and those, like, all the time. They're cool.
Yeah.
They're interesting.
Yeah. Good city bikes. Yeah. I don't have any thoughts. I'm sorry. Anything else? Oh, Blake wants to know. Oh, because I put a tweet, I put an Instagram post up. Can you go to my Instagram? There's with the steering wheels. I drove the Ferrari 812. And then I drove the GT3 RS, and I thought the approach to steering wheels was interesting. The Ferrari has
the buttons and no
everything
buttons.
On the wheel.
Yeah.
And then click over to the right, Zach, because Porsche has nothing on the wheel. So completely different approaches here. And the question is, which do I prefer? So I called the Ferrari race car theater or something like that, or motorsport theater.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. That was cool,
Because
they're
like,
pretending to be race car-y, but it's not really race car stuff.
Yeah,
it
the
just
shit
looks
that's
like
on,
it,
the, on the steering wheel, like, okay, race cars have buttons all on the steering wheel, too, but they don't do this.
Nah.
They don't do any of the stuff that these do.
No, like, you have pit limiters, radio buttons, like, changing fuel maps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And this is just, like, cruise control.
It's like blinkers and headlights and stuff like that. And so, and then on the Porsche, they go, look, you know, I think their philosophy is if you're on the track, you're not changing shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And nothing wrong with a blinker stalk. The blinker stalks and the wiper stalks are basically the same
fine,
as my 87.
Yeah. It works. It's good.
It's fine. And so here's where I think each of their wheels really do match the character of those cars. And with the Ferrari, I think it works because with the Ferrari, you really never have to remove your hands from 9 and 3. Yeah. This car has the fastest front engine steering rack I've ever used. Combined with a very shit turning radius, there's very little angle.
So that's why you don't turn very much.
That could be because of the way the suspension is set up.
Yeah,
so the rack could be very good, but like we talked about the Alpha in the past, mm-hmm. like if Ackerman style setup for the suspension, where it'll like do a little, be a little hoppy and have a big turning radius.
Yeah.
Like, when you're at slow speed and turning, it'll be bad. But when you're going fast and want to turn, it'll respond very quickly.
Yeah.
So like it's trade-offs.
I think each of the steering wheels did match the character of the cars. Although if you just ask which I really prefer, I think I'd go no buttons. I think no buttons over all the buttons.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I think we had one more, and then we go last question, and then we're gonna go get some fucking late ass dinner.
Yeah.
Jordan says, is a Hellcat red eye wide body worth a $250 a day rental experience? Thinking of renting one for my 30th on Sunday. 700 horsepower wide body Hellcat for $250 for 24 hours. I would say a big fat yes.
Yeah. Yes, I would definitely say
I would
yes.
agree. I mean, if you're paying $30 a day for, you know, a Hyundai Accent, $250 for that experience.
For 700 horsepower?
Very, very reasonable.
A Hellcat is a lot of laughs.
Yeah.
If you've never experienced a Hellcat motor, it's a fucking great, great laugh machine. Yeah. So you should definitely spend $250 on a Hellcat for
torque and burning rubber,
Do you want to promote anything, Bose?
Just usual stuff, so you can follow me. Follow me. Hoonable.com is like my portfolio. At Hoonable on Twitter, so that kind of matches up. You can follow me there.
Bozy's the best follow on Twitter if you love cars, because he digs through like import documents and engine diagrams fucking nerdy shit.
Yeah.
You're glad someone else can summarize for you.
And you get cool info, you know, like stuff. So like a lot of that stuff I use, like with a lot of the stuff I work. So like I work in trucking too, and all kinds of things. And I use just with a lot of my jobs and gigs and stuff, I'll use a lot of that stuff, and then I'll share some of the information I find. But
I find it's really helpful, like when the Focus RS like head gasket gate was going on.
Yeah, we talked because he had a car, so I went back and forth with him.
But I think it's really easy.
I had a Lincoln MKT head gasket head gasket.
Well, that was helpful because I got numbers from him, and then I have a guy inside Ford that's like, give me the numbers.
Yeah.
So I went back and forth, and I was able to go
down
through it.
But it's helpful because if all you do as a fan of cars is you scroll through like Twitter quickly in the morning, you read Road and Track, you read Jalopnik, like you see the story that grabs your interest that might just be, oh, the head gaskets are bad, they're blowing up. And you go, oh, that's what it is. And then you continue to spread that information in every parking lot for the rest of your life.
Yeah, that's a lot of that stuff. Yeah. And that's the thing is, there are a lot of people that are just kind of aggregating other people's information. So if one person says something once and all these other blogs or websites aggregate it and becomes truth, and a lot of times it's not true. And so it's like, you know, I try kind of, you know, to get reasonable information out there with stuff that backs up what I'm trying to say.
Nice.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very good.
But
thanks for post-flight showing it. I think it was a good idea.
It was
good.
Glad you it worked out. I'm glad you guys invited me. I'm, you know, happy to be on here, and now we can go get some food.
Yeah. What's the press car at your hotel?
NSX.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're doing a whole deal with the NSX, which is like somebody built a press trip for me.
Who's we? Haggerty?
No, like Acura just invited me straight
really?
Up. Yeah.
Just because you're you?
Yeah.
Because you're Bozy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So like the press trip. So like I work in IMSA and World Challenge, like, you know, just for like my racing stuff. So like I'm a crew chief in World Challenge and I'm a race mechanic in IMSA. So like I work on all this stuff. And like this weekend, I didn't have an IMSA gig.
Uh-huh.
Like a few weeks ago, guys from Acura like, hey, you want to do this trip with us? Fly into LA. We'll give you an NSX. We'll go like Canyons, you know,
awesome.
PCH, all this stuff up to Monterey. And then you hang out with all the like Acura like mechanics and like people and race, you know, race drivers.
Oh, that sounds great.
And camp at the track.
I was perfect. At Laguna?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So I was like, this is like if somebody had asked me
that's
to like build a trip.
Yeah, it's
like
perfect.
This is like almost exactly what I would say.
Have you driven NSX yet?
Oh yeah. I haven't driven this revised one. So this revised one has has like the new anti-roll bars and stuff. Like the last one I drove was like 2 years ago or something like
you
that.
You probably won't notice the difference.
Yeah, so
you have to drive them back to back.
Yeah. So like, you know, I know the changes they made and like why they made them, and like, you know, I'm not a skilled enough driver to know the difference, but I understand why they made them and, you know, what that does to the car. But it's the whole setup is like worked out really well.
Is anyone going in the car with you?
I think I'm gonna pick up an engineer at some point as I'm going up north.
Your suitcase won't fit in the trunk.
Oh yeah.
Uh-uh.
Well, that's gonna be interesting.
Remember, I had the NSX and I had to pick my dad up at the airport, and I learned his suitcase wouldn't fit the trunk, and he had to go.
Somebody might be holding that suitcase in their lap because it has to go with me and the NSX up to Monterey.
Well, dude, are you coming back down this way or are you flying home from there?
Flying out of San Jose.
I'd give you a soft suitcase or something.
I'm flying out of San Jose.
Hope you got a tape measure.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting because I think somewhere like I'm staying down near you and then I'm leaving from there and like I have to go 75 miles north like towards the canyons or somewhere back there. And then I'm meeting bringing a van of Acura people. Uh-huh. I think somebody's going to hop in with me to do the rest of the trip up to Monterey.
your suitcase is going to be belted in the passenger.
I'm sure there's going to be an MDX behind you or something.
I'm sure.
I'm betting that luggage truck.
I'm guessing so, but we'll see. But like I'm hyped about it because it's like literally like rad. I'm not, you know, like fancy hotels and dinners and stuff. Like, I get bored.
And tourist season is kind of over, so Highway 1 up there shouldn't be super crowded.
So it's going to be awesome. Good. So, like, updated NSX, race car stuff.
Sounds perfect.
Like, awesome.
How nice.
I'm hyped about it.
All right, let's get some food, homie.
Let's go eat.
All right, guys, thanks for listening. Bozy Tatrovic. Now you know why I love this fucking guy, because he's the most fucking interesting ref. He's like... Let's get some more fucking refugees like this in this bitch, please. Right. If they're more like him, we need more of that. And your fucking brother, who has an open seat in that chair.
I know
you're out there, Boyan. I didn't forget you. You get a seat in that chair, too. All right.
There you go.
Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, connection to the internet, and something to say. Tomorrow, we're back live at noon Pacific with Amy Shackelford and Johnny Valencia, who are car event planners. And I know a lot of people ask me about that kind of thing as a job. So you can be able to talk to them about career day in car event planning. See you guys later. Good night.
Thanks.